quantum computing. In previous podcasts, we've learned about the need to get ahead of the impact that quantum computers can have on breaking encryption with Mike Brown of Asara in our episode number 97. We've also got a great overview of differing quantum technologies from Vlad Georgiou in episode 104. As there's so much new terminology surrounding quantum, if you haven't listened to these two episodes, I recommend starting there. Today, for our third podcast on quantum computing, I'm delighted to welcome Christian Weedbrook, CEO and founder of Xanadu. Xanadu is a photonic quantum computing company which came out of CDL, an incubator in Toronto, and they're a recent addition to the Georgia Partners portfolio. We'll discuss the advantages of photonic quantum computing over other approaches, and where, use cases for quantum, and why Xanadu is building an open source machine learning library to help the community adopt quantum. It's a great episode, so stick around. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Georgian Impact Podcast. So this is our third podcast on quantum computing, but I'd like to get from you kind of just a basic warm-up, just kind of why you see quantum as an important next step for computing.
Yeah, it's really a significant next step for computing. We really haven't seen anything like quantum computing since the beginning of computing, or, you know, since the mainframes really have come out, and you saw the computer revolution, personal computer revolution, the 70s and 80s. And people often go back to, there's the magic of it. You know, when you understand, well, how is this machine powered? It's powered by the laws of quantum physics. And that's really exciting. There's some weird stuff happening there, things that we don't normally see on our everyday scale. And then, so that's the fascinating side of it. But what that leads to is really the idea that you can have these incredibly powerful computers powered by the laws of quantum physics. And by powerful, I mean, you know, there's usually two categories you can kind of think of. Problems that may take a long time with traditional computers, and problems that have always been out of reach for any computer, even computers that you would run for thousands of years. And these are typically known as intractable problems. So the idea now is these things can actually be opened up is quite incredible. And so you can think of one quantum chip potentially for certain problems being equated to millions of normal chips.
Wow. Now, we often talk about density kind of as the key measure of quantum and how far along different companies get across the different type of technologies. What's your sense of how well things with photonic are progressing on density?
Yeah, one of the great things about us doing photonics, we believe, is the idea that we didn't have to create the telecommunication industry and all the optical components to go with it. So the optical telecommunication industry for, say, internet, fiber optics, and so forth has been around for decades now. So what that means is we can actually stand on the shoulder of that history, essentially, which billions of dollars has been, you know, put into it. So what that means from a practical point of view and everyday point of view is we can actually we can call up companies that sell lasers, sell beam splitters, phase shifters, detectors, and all this optical equipment, and order it and get it sent to us. And that's something that, thankfully, we didn't have to do ourselves. And also, we work with multiple foundries around the world because we have these photonic chips. Everything is kind of miniaturized and put on chips. And we can work with standard foundries. So that's, people label that as CMOS compatible.
Oh, wow.
Essentially, it means, yeah, it's really fascinating because some of these foundries cost billions of dollars, particularly when you want to scale up things. We often work with maybe foundries that are still very expensive, but we start off with prototyping, and then we go to more advanced ones, and then slowly one day we'll be at the mass production side of things. So the ability that we can kind of call up a foundry is very important too, and say, well, we'd like to hear our designs, you know, if you can fabricate them for us and send them back. So we can really leverage the history here. That's why photonics is one of the great points about it.
Is there a bit of a Moore's law working? Obviously, the chip density is something in the old style chips. People talk about density of chips, and we talk about number of qubits in a chip. How do you see the evolution and growth of qubits against, I guess, a timeline?
It's hard to say. So one thing we can potentially say is that once you reach 50 to 100 qubits on chip, you already, for certain problems, you're already bypassing the ability of whole data centers in some sense, you know, millions of chips. So you're already, with a small number of qubits, replacing something that was obeying Moore's law for decades. So we kind of leapfrog ahead of that, which is pretty cool.
I see. Yeah.
But having said that, you can think of going from hundreds of qubits to thousands and to millions and things of that nature. It's unclear how that will progress, whether there will be kind of an equivalent to a Moore's law for quantum. There perhaps can be, but we're in the initial stages now, where the next 3 to 5 years is really about building out the fundamental building blocks rather than scaling up too fast. Still entering periods where we can actually solve important problems, but nothing like the doubling every 18 months or so.
Got it. And it's probably not a fair parallel. And you look me in the eye, I'm a little bit of an older guy. It was before my time. Well, I started in computers in the 70s. Prior to my time, people were wiring with little yellow wires. They weren't thinking yet about chip density. So it's interesting that you're still building kind of the scaffolding around all the pieces to make it operate before you can think about how the density really is the most important measure. There's a lot of other, I guess scaffolding is a good word around that. Is that a fair categorization?
I think so. And one aspect about photonics, getting back to the photonics side of things, which is really interesting and very unique to photonics, is, as you mentioned, you're thinking about scaling up with, say, the number of transistors and squeezing as much computational power on one chip as possible. With photonics, what's very interesting is we have a couple of ways we could build a photonic quantum computer, and we're investing in both approaches. The other one that's very interesting that I haven't mentioned is this idea of using photons. They're not in any one place, meaning that they propagate. We call them flying qubits. And what's cool about that is you can scale up to, in principle, millions by not actually needing a million quantum states existing at the same time. So one way to think about it is you can create a small subset, let's say 4 to 6 qubits, and then you compute in time. So instead of spatially laying out the chip, you have a small chip propagate through and then loop back on itself. And so through that, you can actually show that's equivalent to having, say, a million on one chip, where you've only got a very small subset. And that's because, you know, normal electronics, whether it's classical or quantum, it's fixed on a chip. It's not moving anywhere, so to speak. But with these flying qubits, you can actually propagate or compute in time.
I think there's at least a t-shirt in there with a flying qubit on it.
Actually, that's, yeah, maybe something like, I don't give a flying qubit.
There you go. So you'd mentioned fiber, and that's networking. So let me do a little networking thing. 5G. So, you know, 5G is either really important or it's really overhyped. More likely it's the classic IT answer, and it's going to be all of the above or both of the above. Now, I get that I can download a movie faster with 5G. Fine. But to me, 5G matters where low latency creates an opportunity for applications that never existed before. You know, remote telemedicine with surgeons doing remote working with robots through the network. If there's any latency there, the patient's going to die perhaps. So lag matters. Speed really matters. Is there a parallel with quantum that you see? And take me through some use cases as to where you see these applications of quantum kind of coming first.
First off, this may sound obvious, but you want problems that have not already been solved by traditional computers. You know, you just don't want to create something that's going to take a lot of time and money, and it just does just as well, or maybe even slightly better. Whenever you have a new technology, particularly if you want it to take off, it has to be a couple of orders of magnitude better in principle for there to be a need for adoption. And the system, in addition to that, should be something that's very complex. So as the number of aspects of the system increases, hopefully exponentially, it just becomes too much to manage. And so putting those things together, the common answers to the applications in terms of verticals would be finance. You know, going back to what I mentioned then, you can have a book or a portfolio of stocks. And as you add more and more, it doesn't scale very well. It doesn't scale linearly. So it may scale, you know, quadratically or exponentially. And in that case, that's ideal for quantum. And also, you'd like to have a third characteristic where if you move the needle a little bit in these verticals, it's worth, you know, it's very important. It's worth a lot of money in the case of finance.
But you're talking large portfolio. This is not for normal human beings. This is for large portfolios, you know, big companies managing large amounts of data that are looking to apply some ML or AI to how they manage the portfolio.
Yeah, exactly right. A more specific example, we just announced our work that we worked on with Scotiabank and BMO. And this is a good example. So there's certain aspects of their computations in the banks, specifically capital markets, where they have to run it overnight So there's a problem. Someone pushes a button when they leave work and it starts churning and computing overnight, and they come back in the morning and they have the answer. And that's something that due to the complexity of the problem, it takes a long time to actually find the answer. In this case, 6 to 8 hours, for instance.
Wow.
And so a quantum computer can come in, and provided you have the right type of quantum computer, you can actually do this in minutes now. So now that's just like a huge game changer. So you find these things, pharma and drug discovery is another one where the simulations can take months, 6 months or more to do. So if you can reduce the time it takes, particularly in the way that a quantum computer can, then this is going to be very important.
In this case, the quantum chip really is, I don't know if it's fair to call it a sideboard or a co-processor. So you know what needs to be done. You're Scotiabank or you're a pharma company, and you somehow kick off this process, and the system knows to spin it off to this chip so that everything still stays in place. And this is kind of an add-on for particular application and usage. Is that fair?
Yeah, exactly right. We don't see quantum replacing everything in terms of computing. You see it as a co-processor, as you mentioned, or an accelerator, particularly in the early days. There's certain things like loading email, you know, loading Facebook and things like that where, you know, it's not believed a quantum computer is suited for. You know, use your normal chips for that.
No, you don't know how many friends I might have. No.
I look at you and I think you have quite a few.
So we've got finance, which is pretty cool. Absolutely. The drug simulation. What other type of these are obviously high computing workloads. What else might be something that you guys are thinking about?
Yeah. So those two, along with material design, for instance, you know, that would fall under the area also of quantum chemistry, designing new batteries, more efficient batteries. That's a usual suspect in use cases. Another area would be logistics. So traveling salesmen is a great problem. You know, working with, for instance, autonomous vehicle companies, you know, Uber, for instance, last year, I think, did 1 billion trips. So if you can somehow optimize the routes that the Uber drivers or Lyft drivers, whoever it is, takes, then first off, you're reducing the gas consumption, but also it's a great thing for the environment. This has a characteristic also, as the number of stops increases, it scales very badly as well. So these are things that do take a lot of computational power and effort.
And just to make that clear, this is really important. Today, if I use my GPS and there's a traffic issue and they want to take you off the highway, 7 zillion cars go on this little tiny road with 3 traffic lights. You're talking about optimizing all the cars, and they all go to different places so they don't get jammed up. But they can all get off the highway, but they don't go to the same little tiny road with 3 traffic lights.
For instance, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Optimizing traffic congestion is definitely one of the aspects of this. And again, it's an important problem, but it also, as the number of cars or situations increase, it becomes a very tough problem, a very complex problem. And it's outside the usual use case of traditional computers.
Very cool. So let me, you know, we talk about these different industries and different applications. Let me kind of build up to a question for you on how we build that. So we talked, you mentioned mainframes and the PC explosion. So we know about chips, and there was, you know, there are Intel chips, and there were RISC chips, or I guess there are RISC chips that they originally running Unix, and there were mainframe chips. And I think the chips became a little less relevant, and operating systems began to cross over. Linux ran on different platforms and the like. But obviously what happened in the world of IT, we began to generalize, we began to build some interfaces, make systems more consumable. And so therefore middleware showed up. We have some interface tools. So I guess this is a two-part question. What's Xanadu doing about it? And what is it with you and the Beatles?
I see the connection there. Well, I think there was a time where software was king, and hardware kind of, obviously it still existed, but it wasn't as crucial or as important. And really in the last, you know, 5 or so years, hardware's come back in a big way. If you just look at the number of startups and companies, and I don't even mean quantum hardware companies, you know, you have a lot of, you know, special purpose or AI accelerator chip companies. They're also actually, some of them using photonics, others electronics, nothing to do with quantum. But you know, you see with NVIDIA, for instance, people just found use cases in terms of Bitcoin mining and also graphics cards and things like that. And then you throw quantum on top of things as well, where, you know, it's our belief you really need to control the full stack. You need to do hardware and you need to do software in order to create the best product really for customers. Now, the second, which is to me more important, is about the Beatles. You know, it's definitely my favorite band, and I have been since I was very young. And they've been inspiring for me. And it was cool to bring out some of the famous songs like Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields and kind of label them with products. Xanadu itself is named after the song from the movie Xanadu. So there's a lot of, I guess, pop cultural references there.
So Strawberry Fields is an open source project. So obviously, you mentioned you want to control the stack. And nowadays, control is quite different than what it was back in the days of proprietary operating systems or proprietary interfaces. So you're doing some open source work with Strawberry Fields. Tell me more about how that's going to work and what you're driving for with that.
We decided from day one to keep our software open source. And really the reason is, well, where are we offering the most uniqueness? And it's in our photonic chips. So everything is really built around how do we drive customers back to using our chips? And what better way, or one of the better ways, is to really have software that is really amazing. And if people love that, it naturally feeds them back to our chips. So from a very high level, as you mentioned, the two products, Strawberry Fields is actually a photonic simulator. It's very unique. There's none like that anywhere in the world. It's very much tailored to our photonic quantum computer. At the very top, you actually have an interactive device that where you can kind of drag and drop gates onto a circuit and press, you know, run, and it'll output the output of the circuit. And IBM has one like that, and we're the only two in the world that has that. And Strawberry Fields will be used as a way to connect to our cloud platform. You know, when you want to connect to the cloud, which is the backbone, which has our hardware. So that's really key. On the other side, Penny Lane, and by the way, both Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane were released on the same 45 disc in 66. So there's also another connection there. That's key. And what's really great about Penny Lane, the first thing when I think about Penny Lane, I think agnostic. So it actually runs not only on our hardware, but every other hardware that's out there.
And that's a machine learning platform, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So we think of it as the TensorFlow or PyTorch for quantum computers.
Great.
It's a way to abstract away all the potential challenges or the difficulties in understanding the hardware for developers.
So if a CEO thinks about this, they actually should think about Penny Lane as a layer of machine learning, mm-hmm. and then they could begin to see what it might do on a photonic chip with Strawberry Fields as a simulator.
That's correct. That's right.
And a CEO who would think about this, really, as I listen to your use cases, there's really, and although they're related, I kind of categorize it in two places. One is just raw compute power, because you'll get more compute power of it. But obviously, the number one use case against that might well be optimization cases. So if you're mm-hmm. a CEO that's beginning to get a huge AWS bill or whatever cloud service they're using to do some work, if they see a lot of number crunching, is it time to think about how I might be able to optimize that and move over to quantum? Is it time? Should they call you? Should they start to play around? What's the kind of the time frame for a CEO who is recognizing that there is something coming down the pike that's going to be could impact his or her business?
I think the time is now. I should say it depends on what industry you're in. If you think of the industries I mentioned before, banking, finance, you know, hedge funds, for instance, and pharma and drug discoveries, these are industries that always try to stay on top of the latest technological developments. So for sure, in those industries, it's very important to start understanding this now. Our works with the banks here in Canada have so far shown that it actually takes a while to really connect the dots. That's really a big thing, because this shows you when you have such a paradigm shifting technology, it's not just the same as Intel releasing or Nvidia releasing their latest chip and people know what to do with it. It's very different. Even if we had the most powerful type of quantum computer today and we released it, people wouldn't really know what to do with it. There's still a lot of help that needs to, you know, professional services and things like that. So what we've done at Xanadu, we've actually started a quantum readiness program. And essentially it's for CEOs, as you mentioned, big companies in those two industries that are like, well, what is quantum computing? How do I get into it? Is now the right time? What's this roadmap look like? And we can really educate the customer on those answers.
You know, when I had a product business way back when, you know, we always had a handful of skunkworks projects going on that we were just kind of really working on, so we knew what was going to happen. It sounds like it is time. People shouldn't assume I'll wait 2 years down the line to pick up the phone. If they think they're getting close, they're not going to be on the quantum bandwagon tomorrow, but they should start thinking about it, maybe do a small skunkworks project, start to understand better. I like the fact that you could consult them on how to fit the pieces together and recognize that 12, 18 months down the line, this could be real and you don't want to be caught kind of behind the eight ball.
For sure. And you can imagine, say, in those two industries, finance and pharma, imagine the competitive advantage you can have by starting these things early. I mean, it's potentially huge. If quantum lives up to its potential, then these will be some of the most dramatic competitive advantages that we've ever seen.
If that doesn't get someone's attention, I don't know what will. What a great interview. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
No problem. Thank you for inviting me.